Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Byron Pringle was born before you were.
Yeah.
And Byron Pringle was born when I was a junior in college. I just realized I could be your father. I mean, my social life would have had to have gone much, much better.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Dad?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
God, that was really good. That's really good work right there, both from Beards on the edit and from, could be my dad, Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. Follow him on Twitter, at Matt Derrick. Check out all of his work at ChiefsDigest.com. There's a book. There's all the links are there. You know the drill at this point. It's Matt. We're going to talk about the Chiefs with Matt for 30 minutes. Then we're going to move on with our show. That's how it works. It's a Monday. You get it. Matt, I'll ask you the question that I've been asking to most people over these last couple of weeks and just continue to get all the way up until draft time, a little bit of a heat check. How are you feeling right now about the NFL draft coverage, where we are at in that cycle, and how much time we still have to go?
Can we start tomorrow?
Yeah, I would love that.
Ready to go. I mean, I'm at this point in the draft where I usually am like around August 26th during training camp and the preseason. It's like, okay, let's go. We don't need any more, do we? If everybody's ready to show up, let's start tomorrow. Everybody's on the clock.
And at this point, nothing else is really going to change. The team's boards are set, right? You can't possibly. I think Trey Lance has gotten like four pro days. I'm over it. It's fine. Let's go.
We can squeeze in between us at least four or five more mock drafts, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm doing one right now.
Yeah.
So I could certainly squeeze in a few.
I have done enough mock drafts at this point and on enough different settings and everything that I have had the Chiefs take every single player who is draft eligible at one point or another. We've covered, like, yes, including Trevor Lawrence. One time I traded up the one with all of my future picks just to see if I could. I've done that for every single draft eligible player this year.
In this mock draft I'm doing right now, which I'm not going to tease it too much because I don't want to give anything away, since I'll have that up on the site and everything. There was a ton of players that I would take at 31 that were there. And I decided not to take an offensive left tackle.
Ooh!
Because I thought that there's just too many other guys left, and there were so many tackles left that I'm like, I'm going to take a chance that one of these guys is still there. 63. No, none of them were there.
Well, so this is, I want to talk to you about some of the stuff that we heard from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes today, and we'll get to that at some point. But this is the specific little sliver of draft conversation that I'm still actually kind of enjoying, because we were talking about Mel Kiper's mock last week. And I just sort of had this sort of, I don't know, perhaps disrespectful surprise in my voice whenever I said that I thought Mel Kiper's mock draft was really good for the Chiefs and very, like, on brand, which I hesitate because, like, you know, Nate put out a mock draft today. You're working on a mock draft. Your guys' mock drafts are going to have a very strong knowledge of how Brett Veach does drafts at this point. That doesn't always happen on a national scale, but they got there in Mel's mock draft, and Jason Oway was still there. All right, Brett Veach gets an edge, sure. And then they took Walker Little at 63, because there were a bunch of those. Tevin Jenkins was gone, the top four tackles were all gone, and there were a bunch of those kind of next-tier guys in Kiper's mock. The Chiefs just got the best tackle available at 63, and that's a strategy that I'm pretty comfortable with at this point, I think. So I imagine you're feeling something similar to a little bit of that?
Not as good, because if Walker Little was still left in this mock draft that I'm doing at 63,
yeah,
I'd be doing a jig right now.
Okay, all right, so not great.
this is a mock draft where like four tackles go in the first round,
mm-hmm.
And that's why I decided, you know what, a couple of guys that I like are further down the list. Maybe I can sneak it. And I had a house rule on this mock draft no trades because that's cheating in a way.
Right.
So I'm not doing any trades on this one. I'll probably do a mock draft before next week that has some trades in it. But this one, no trades. I didn't cheat. Yeah, I think 12 tackles went in the second round. So
it's a lot of tackles.
Yeah, I'm gonna end up with a guy from Illinois State probably before this is all done.
Well, so then let's talk about what Andy Reid said today. And then I don't know if any of this changed your mind on anything. For me, there was one nugget that I thought might be noteworthy. But Andy Reid was asked a couple of times about the tackles. And obviously, hey, if they had to play a game tomorrow, who would be your starting left tackle? And are you guys going to add more tackles? And obviously, some of these are must-lie situations, and we know all of that. But what I think is kind of interesting is that they've gotten to this point without adding a veteran who could step in right away. Andy Reid also left the door open for Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz return. The door's open for anything if you ask Andy Reid about, you know, adding players and whatnot. He said that they were optimistic about maybe moving Lucas Niang to left tackle, and obviously Mike Remmers spent most of last year at right tackle anyway. I've got all sorts of things, all sorts of holes I would poke in all of those topics in some form or another. But I'm curious what you, how legitimate you thought most of those things were, and how much of it was just Andy Reid having to answer a question.
I'm going to say that I think that the left tackle discussion and tackle discussion today in general was probably 71% Andy Reid just has to answer a question in some form.
Mm-hmm.
27% maybe just didn't quite understand the question or did not want to answer the question that was asked, which I guess leaves, what, 3%?
Yeah.
Andrew Wiley is your starting left tackle?
Yep.
And, I mean, first of all, Andrew Wiley's my dog, so I will go to war with Andrew Wiley.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But, especially since there was the question where he was asked specifically about left tackle, and the two names he comes up with are Lucas Niang and Kyle Long.
Yeah.
And that was – the Lucas Niang's not entirely perplexing because the Chiefs drafted him number three, you know, the third round roster, for a reason. I mean, it's because they actually thought that he had left tackle potential. Now, the idea was that he might need to play a year guard before he kicks outside.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he doesn't have it under his belt yet. So I think that's still a little bit of a reach if you're thinking that Lucas Niang is going to be starting week one at left tackle, but okay. Kyle Long hasn't played a lot of left tackle, period, much
yep.
less recently.
Yep.
So that's a little confusing. And the fact that nobody else's name, I mean, Rimmer's name came up, Andrew Wiley's name came up, noticeable whose name did not come up, like Martinez Rankin's name did not come up.
I didn't catch that. Joe Tooney's name also didn't come up, which I feel like pretty well answers that question that some people have been floating out there as well.
I would think so, especially since he talked about the fact that he is the best guard in the league. So
yeah.
I don't think you take the best guard in the league and move him to left tackle or center.
Right.
So I think you can rule those moves out. I mean, maybe it's a huge bluff smokescreen, and you're right. Andy Reid did not close any doors. He left a lot open, and he didn't close any. So trade, draft, free agent signing, immaculate conception, I guess everything's still on the table.
I will tell you that I gasped whenever he said, you know, we got options, got some guys coming back like Rim and Wiley. Because, Matt, I don't know if you remember the last time that Mike Rimmers and Andrew Wiley were this team's starting tackles, but I do. It was one of their last games of the season. You know, think about it. It may have been the last game. It may have been the Super Bowl where that happened, and everyone could universally agree, we can't do that bleep again. Like, so that simply cannot be it. That one's not a valid answer. That one does not compute.
It certainly felt like we got a lot of coach speak
yeah.
on tackle today.
Yeah.
And not a lot of cold, hard answers, because I went into this not knowing who the starting left tackle is.
Yep.
And I can tell you I still don't know who the left tackle is.
Yep. If you had to make your best call as of today, like if you had to say, all right, here's what – They're playing a game tomorrow, and then we'll go big picture. But if they are playing a game tomorrow, what is the offensive line in your best estimation?
That's a great question. I mean, because there's only two that I think I would feel that are 90% locks,
mm-hmm.
And that's Tooney at left guard.
Yep.
And I think Rimmers at right tackle. I mean, those are the only two that I would feel like saying 90% likelihood. Those are the guys.
Okay.
I think I would probably go down into the 70s to, you know, to bring in Austin Blythe at center.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's most likely would be the starter right now, but I wouldn't bet the house on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's other options that are available, and he's not being paid like a starter, so there's that. Left tackle, I have no idea. I mean, if we went with just what Andy Reid told us today, I think I'd probably line up with Lucas Niang and see what happens.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And right guard, I would say I'm about 51% LDT and 49% the field, because they've got a lot of field options there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I don't think that after a year off, his age, that LDT's a slam dunk to come back and have that job. I mean, I think he will start as a starter at right guard, but I don't know that he would be there week one. But right now, 51%, yeah, I'd say he would be the right guard.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you say 90% for Rimmers at right tackle, but I also have to remind myself that we're talking about in this situation where, like, he's not going to be your left tackle. It's got to be somebody else, and it might as well be Nang. So I agree. I think that is probably how that plays out. How is that informing what you're expecting now with the remainder of the offseason? Because, again, I mean, we've talked about this 1,000 times. We're very much in reruns, but it's also because every time, I think, the next time we talk, we'll have a little more clarity. And right now, we don't. I mean, Alejandro Villanueva is visiting the Ravens, which is interesting because they're maybe still looking to trade Orlando Brown, and maybe they're bringing in Villanueva, and what would that all entail? Russell Okung's name, I'm contractually obligated to mention once a show, so I got that out of the way. Then we have the entire draft class. We have the fact that it does seem like the consensus is developing that there's a little bit of a cutoff that probably ends with Tevin Jenkins, and doesn't seem terribly likely to me that he's going to be there at 31. Then you have the next tier of guys, but none of those guys are really pro ready. And there's a whole word salad for you. Now what? I mean, where do we go from here? Where do you expect them to go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating because, you know, one, and we will hear from Brett Veach later this week, but I don't expect him to come out, obviously, and say, oh, yeah, hey, here's the guy that we're looking at left tackle. If he's there at 31, we got our guy.
Right.
No, he's not going to do that.
Right.
But, I mean, honestly, even though I'm not even sure. I mean, even though we're all drooling over Penei Sewell, I'm not sure that there's anybody who's an absolute slam dunk, just guaranteed that you could say it's going to come in and be able to start at left tackle on day one.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, there's 7-8 guys I think you could put into a hat, and if you drew one of them and said, you know what, there's a chance this guy could be a left tackle starter, I mean, I think they could. I mean, I think there's a high enough ceiling on a bunch of guys. So, I mean, my gut is still that the left tackle starting week one is not currently on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not sure that the week one starter and the week 17 starter will be the same person, and that either one of them are on the roster. I mean, you know, there's a part of me that truly believes that we may see Eric Fisher back again.
Yeah.
Especially if everything else does not work out. I mean, and if he recovers, which from that injury, he could certainly play this year.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Chiefs are keeping that door open, I feel like they're keeping it open for a reason, that one of their options may certainly be, you know what, if we can get through the first half of the season okay, maybe we can get Fish back.
The thing there, because that's come up several times over basically since they cut him, and I think that enough people have alluded to that who would know that the smoke is legitimate, that maybe there's fire in there somewhere. The thing about that that really, I think I could just say freaks me out. Might be overstating it, but the thing that makes me uneasy, at least, is that that's the inverse of the way you would want that to go if you got to pick the half of the season you had Eric Fisher for. Because let's say it's Samuel Cosmi at 31, or they take Liam Eichenberg, or whatever, right? Any of these dudes we've talked about 1,000 times now. If they take one of those guys at 31, I would love for them to not have to start for the first 8 weeks. It's kind of my, honestly, it's kind of my Russell Okung logic of like, listen, he's eventually going to get hurt, but as much time as you can buy with him for the rookie, the more snaps you get with him out there, the better. And you'll take what you can get, and then eventually you expect an Eichenberg or somebody to be able to start. The other thing is that this team has no depth at tackle at all right now. Like, all those things Andy Reid said are nice, but if they have to start, even if it's somebody not currently on the roster, maybe you get one swing tackle out of Rimmers or Niang, but if that left tackle goes down, certainly if that left tackle is Eric Fisher coming off an Achilles, like, it just feels like no matter what, they're juggling fire.
Yeah, they are. I mean, and I would still differentiate, you know, depth between left and right tackle. I think they have a ton of depth at right tackle.
Sure.
Because, you know what, I mean, even though we talk about it, I feel like, hey, you know what, if Andrew Wiley needs to be your right tackle and you have a Blake Bell on this team now that can, you know, chip a little bit for you, you've got that. If you're and you're strong enough at the left tackle that you can provide a little help on the right side when needed, I mean, that to me is okay. The problem, of course, with the Super Bowl is that the Chiefs need help at all five positions, and they didn't have anybody to help out at all five positions.
Mm-hmm.
They were just overwhelmed. I mean, injury-wise, what the Bucs decided to do, I mean, it was worst of all worlds in that mm-hmm. situation. So, I mean, right tackle, I feel like, you know what, they've got three or four guys, actually, that could play at right tackle, and if not give you solid play, at least give you replacement-level play. At left tackle is where I just don't see it right now. I mean, mm-hmm. you're right. I mean, that's just a dearth of possibilities, at least proven possibilities. So, here I am talking about my mock draft where I don't take a tackle in the first round, and I've been saying I think there's 80% chance the Chiefs are going to take a tackle in the first round. I mean, I don't see how they can't come out with one and how that person does not become the front runner to start. But I also can't see, you know, that maybe the Chiefs aren't done. I mean, I could see Russell Wilcox. Maybe there is another veteran that the Chiefs feel like that could at least help them out. Maybe. There's trade. I'm not going to buy into the Orlando Brown thing because I'm still not sold that that would be a great fit,
mm-hmm.
but maybe there's other possibilities.
That's another one of the things with where you look at the draft board and whatnot, and I think this is something that a lot of people have accepted way too easily. Most of these dudes coming out, again, maybe with the exception of Sewell, and you can go down the line a little bit. It seems like there's a relative consensus that Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern is going to be great. It seems like there's a little less of a consensus that Christian Darrisaw, who's probably going to be a top 15 pick, is going to be great. But you have him, you have those three guys, and then also Tevin Jenkins. Tevin Jenkins right now is approaching Patrick Peterson territory of the savior of this team, who's probably never going to actually play for this team. Because the issue is, even with those guys, and especially with everybody, if you love Sam Cosmi, cool. But literally every single one of those guys, I think there is a legitimately a very, very large question of it could be arm length, it could be footwork, it could be college experience, of can this dude play left tackle in the NFL? And certainly can he do it day one? Like that... I think it would be foolish for anybody to say, all right, first round draft pick means automatic starter. We should be beyond that at this point, and I'm worried that a lot of people aren't yet.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp that you are. I mean, I always feel like that it's difficult for a rookie to come in. If for no other reason, we're talking about a rookie coming in to play on a world championship contender.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a rookie coming in, you know, to play on a 4-12 team
right.
that you just want to hopefully get better, maybe play close to 500. You're talking about a guy that you want to come in and expect to start for the potential world champions.
Yeah.
That's a pretty high level. But, you know, the Chiefs, by somewhat their own actions, somewhat bad luck, are in this situation where they may very well be in that spot. And it's a tough time because, you know, as Andy Reid talked about it today, you know, without those OTA practices that we don't know are going to happen, you may not have a lot of time with this rookie until you get to training camp. And if that's the case, it's going to be even harder for a rookie left tackle to come in and play week one.
What are you most interested in right now outside of the tackle position? We've spent 20 straight minutes saying the same thing in five different ways about tackle. What are you most interested in away from the tackle position?
I mean, clearly it's how the Chiefs spend, you know, their day one and day two picks, because I'm really, even though I expect that one of those selections will be a tackle, a potential left tackle, I think receiver and edge are not out of the possibilities. And I'll tease it with my mock draft. The first one I'll have up tomorrow, maybe tonight, has a receiver in the first round.
Let's go! Let's go!
Is it Kyle Pitts?
Choo-choo. Let's get this train rolling, baby. Let's get this Chiefs-ache receiver in the first round train going. I love it. Talk to me.
Doubling down on offense for Patrick Mahomes.
All right, tell me why. Tell me why. Go ahead.
Well, and I mean, once again, I mean, it depends on.
I'm in a great mood now because you've come to this place with me, which is I thought I was going to just shiver alone, cold in this cave. I really hope the Chiefs end up with a receiver in the first round because they love giving Patrick Mahomes more weapons. Sorry, tell me why.
Well, there's some really, really good receivers, and if the after the draft in this one, you know, I mean, to a degree, I mean, all drafts are random, but and online mock drafts are more random than anything else. Mm-hmm. Real life, certainly. But, hey, there's certainly a possibility that the Chiefs sitting there at 31, if that's where they stay, that the best players available are a receiver. And if that's the case, I stick to my board. I mean, if the tackles that I like are gone and there's not the one I wanted there, or there's somebody I think that maybe I can get in the second round by moving up later, if I think there's an impact player there that is underrated, still around, and really fits what I want to do, why wouldn't you take it? So, and I think that as badly as the Chiefs do need left tackle, and I think we all agree on that, I don't know that Brett Veach would just simply walk away from what he thinks could be a slam dunk pick at another position if it's available.
All right, I know you're not going to tell us who it is because we need people to read it at
ChiefsDigest.com. Clicks, man,
Matt needs the clicks. It's the reason we do all of this. This all exists for clicks. But I am curious, you know, Matt, because what you're doing right now by saying you're taking a receiver, not telling us who it is that I feel like I'm, you know, perhaps getting baited, man. Anything? Is that moving the needle?
I will tell you that it's a receiver over 6'1".
I was gonna say, is it, because I'm just trying to rule out just the same prototype of dudes at 6 foot or below, but I thought that might be too specific.
I almost just gave you 6 foot to make it, but then I thought, you know what, I'll give you that extra inch.
So really had a perfect convergence there as we got a real clean cut of that for beards to mark, and also my entire computer crashed, just the whole thing. Like, it flashed white and then black, and now nothing's responding. That's exciting. Live radio.
Wait, is that true, or is this...
That's true. That's true.
Okay.
That's why I went silent long enough for Matt to say that he's going to give us the extra inch, which I have, of course, you know, really appreciate.
I know Seth doesn't care about that extra inch,
hell,
but
Matt does.
I appreciate that Matt, when given the opportunity, will give us that extra inch.
There's a clean cut for you there, too.
Yep. Yep, there sure is. So tell me, give me a little bit more then on the receiver spot specifically, because
I'm not going to be able to use my computer for a minute here. This is going to be a test.
Obviously, I'm excited about this because I'm a simple man. I like it when Patrick Mahomes throws the football far and then a fast, tall guy catches it and scores. That's what I'm here for. That's my game. But specifically, as much as the tackle stuff has surprised me, I was also second most surprising non-move of the offseason for me was finding any of those receivers that could have come in and replaced Sammy Watkins. And clearly, they were very in on a few dudes, specifically Juju Smith-Schuster, because he told us the story about Andy Reid texting him pictures of the Lombardi Trophy and all that. Like, Andy Reid was out here doing the recruiting himself, and so for me, that only further cemented in my mind they're not going to go into this season with Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson being their top three weapons.
Yeah, you know, and it's an interesting, because I think this is, to me, an interesting discussion of the psychology of NFL players and receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I personally, I would think if I'm an NFL receiver and the money were all equal and I had a chance to go anywhere, I would think that I would go somewhere where I think I can win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
If the money were equal. I mean, you know, to me, the chance to win's worth a few bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe not $5 million, but, you know, if the money is comparable, I feel like that. So when I see that there are players that, say, bypass the Chiefs to sign with the New York Jets or the Detroit Lions mm-hmm. or somebody, I say to myself, that player clearly just cares about one extra dollar.
Right.
Because there's, or the other part of it is that any veteran receiver that comes to Kansas City knows that they are going to be third fill.
Right.
Because they have to be content with knowing that Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are going to get the ball ahead of them. And you know what? There's if you're good enough to be an NFL receiver, there's enough ego there, too.
Sure.
That can be a factor. So I get that. But at the same time, that means that winning or being an alpha is more important, or money or alpha is more important than winning.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then you don't want that player in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Now, Juju's different. I mean, you know what? I can see, hey, he wants to stick with his quarterback, feels like maybe that's the best chance for him to put up the numbers and get what he wants. Maybe he can have the best of both worlds. Maybe mm-hmm. he can make a run with it 1 year, and now he's going to be back on free agency. And hey, what? Maybe KC works for him next year.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But you know what? I mean, the Chiefs, but they, especially in the short-term future, even with Patrick Mahomes, maybe in that spot, because there are going to be players at other positions who might very well say, hey, I want to go play with Patrick Mahomes because it gives me a chance to win. But if you're a pass catcher, I can certainly understand and see what you might say. You know what? I'm nobody's third fiddle.
Yeah. Because also, I mean, this all, everything you just said all ties together also, because it's third fiddle math on will I be able to put up stats that get me paid at my next stop, which is, again, very much a part of Juju's logic there, I think, which is understandable. The one other element that I think is kind of interesting is, hey, if you said, listen, you're going to make a ton of money regardless of where you go on just sort of like a normal human being scale, but in one spot you're going to have a better time working there, if that's catching passes from Patrick Mahomes instead of catching passes from, I guess just rookie TBD, and we probably know who that is, certainly for Jacksonville, maybe for New York and all that, but like, if you know that you're going to play for a coach that has pretty rave reviews among your peers and a quarterback that has rave reviews among your peers, that seems like it would move the needle in the Chiefs' favor as well, but obviously hasn't done that universally. Let's talk about the one other spot then that at least I've been thinking about quite a bit and that continues to pop up in mocks pretty frequently. Do you have a feel at edge right now? We have another note of a veteran that came in, didn't get a deal signed in Melvin Ingram. They did sign Jaron Reed. Maybe that moves Chris Jones over, but it seems to me like it's probably a three-position race at that first pick as of right now.
Yeah, I feel like it. I mean, that is certainly, like I said, I mean, I would feel very confident that if I had to pick three positions that the Chiefs come out of the first three picks with, I think it would be that. I mean, tackle, receiver, and edge. Doesn't mean that they, if they, you know, see a guy that they really think might be a value in the fourth or the fifth, that maybe they push it back. But mm-hmm. to me, those feel like the three biggest needs for this team for right now and for the future. I mean, those are the, especially with an edge, because I think that's a player that you could plug in this year in a limited role. Doesn't have to be somebody that's going to play 60% of the snaps. It can be somebody that's primarily a pass rusher first, that can be a situational player, because you've got the pieces around that you can move people around. You don't have to have that person be a starter, but you are probably going to need them to be a starter in 22 and 23. And if that's the case, that, hey, Mike Dana is going to be a starter in the future too, and you feel pretty good about that, which you could, then, you know, you feel like that's a position where you could really solidify it for the future. And I think that there are some guys out there that would probably fit that kind of mold.
Hmm. If we have to play the game of those three positions are off the board, I'm just looking at a draft board right now and trying to figure out, not specific players, but just a position that's not those three to go within the first couple of rounds for the Chiefs. I would probably include tight end with receivers. Like, it wouldn't, depending on the type of player, I don't know who necessarily it would be. In the first few rounds, it starts getting kind of thin after Kyle Pitts. But it's not going to be quarterback, and even I will make this mistake again. It's not going to be running back. And maybe it's not going to be a guard. They've put all the money in guard imaginable. I guess I could see them wanting to upgrade at center, and then where Austin Blythe is competition slash depth slash security there. But they've spent, again, an interior defensive line bringing Reed in, although it's just for 1 year. The linebacker spot, I think, is relatively thin, but I'd be really surprised if they took a linebacker in the first or second round. Brett Veach doesn't take corners early, historically speaking, and they've got a couple safeties, obviously, pretty locked in, although Matthew hasn't gotten his contract extension yet. So I don't know. Do you have a sneaky bet if you had to leave those three positions?
Yeah, my sleeper actually probably is linebacker. And I would be relatively surprised if it was in the first round. I mean,
yeah.
I could see there being a couple of people that, you know, that would fit the Chiefs well, they would at least shown some interest in, that wouldn't necessarily knock me over with a feather, that mm-hmm. I could see them. And I could certainly see that if those are players were available in the second round, I could see Brett Veach jumping on him in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably be my sleeper, because once again, you look at the makeup of that position group. Yeah, you've got Anthony Hitchens, but for how much longer?
Right.
You've got Willie Gay, and that's the one piece that you feel pretty good about, but he's going to need a partner.
Yeah.
And even though I think we're accepting the fact that the NFL, and certainly the Chiefs now with Steve Spagnuolo, it's a 4-2-5 scheme.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have three linebackers on the field as a sub-package at this point.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't necessarily be overrun with linebackers, but you need two that you feel comfortable with on the field at any one time. And Chiefs are pretty thin there. I mean, Ben Neiman's your number three guy, and he has some limitations. So that's a position that I think needs some beefing up. And there are some players that, again, I mean, Chiefs are kicking some tires there. Absolutely. I mean, we've seen them have some interest in some linebackers in this draft. So, and linebackers that you think are probably going to be second-round guys. So it wouldn't surprise me if they went there.
I'd be kind of bummed if they did, but let me run this past you, and then we'll let you go. You mentioned Willie Gay as the one guy that you feel pretty good about, not just for next year, but also for a few years beyond that, because you don't know what the future of Hitchens is going to be. And listen, I liked Willie Gay when they drafted him, and I wanted to see him on the field more than he ever got on the field last year. And at this point, I believe that the main reason he wasn't on the field last year was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, that he wasn't on the field, that he's still getting to the speed of the NFL mentally, even though he's physically the speed is there, and still working in Spags' scheme and all that stuff, right? I think, if I had to bet, like I think that Willie Gay will be a starting caliber NFL linebacker, if not a star, over the next few years. But it feels to me like we've really, like he is almost as sharpied into the starting lineup as anybody on the roster at this point for a guy who got next to no actual on-field playing time last year. I'm not trying to be a hater, but I do think it's kind of interesting that he and Lucas Niang both with extremely limited total snaps as a second and third round picks last year. I do feel like they've kind of gotten a bit of a fast track in most people's minds. What do you think that that's true? And then where are you on that? Do you think that's a reasonable concern?
Yeah, I mean, you are right. I mean, you know, I think that we have kind of put Willie Gay into the microwave a little bit as far as just how much he's ready to go. But, you know, once again, I thought it was really, really telling today when Andy Reid, when I, you know, asked him about how he would maybe do this year differently from last year's virtual offseason workouts. And, you know, he took the opportunity to just talk about how important that on-field experience is and specifically talked about Willie Gay.
Mm.
And the fact that, you know, they didn't have the chance to work with him on the drops and the coverages and all the different things that he was going to see. And that absolutely, that might be one of the most crystal clear things that the Chiefs have ever said about Willie Gay.
Yeah.
Which we tried to get them to say that last year about why he wasn't playing. And it really does stem back to the fact that he was a player that was a raw player. He didn't have a lot of experience in college. And they didn't have the time because of the off-season program to really get that on-field experience for him. You're hoping that experience that he got last year, and more specifically the practice experience he got and what work he's going to get this year, makes him ready. I feel like that he has the physical skill set to be able to do that. I mean, because we've seen it. We've seen the physical skills. I have a lot more questions about Lucas Niang because we've never seen it, and there's been an injury history, and he hasn't gotten to test himself yet.
Yeah.
Willie Gay's gotten at least to test himself a little bit and hold his own. So I feel really good about him. But that's the only one I can say that I think that it's probably unfair to put that much expectations on him, but I think he can handle it.
Yeah. I'm hopeful. I just wonder if we've put a lot of faith in the microwave that we can't see through the window on just yet. But I'm I admire the optimism, and I'm also rooting for it because I do think Willie Gay will be a lot of fun whenever he does have all that on-field experience and confidence of the system and of the coaching staff around him. So, Matt, we'll let you go. Mock draft coming up on Chiefs Digest either tonight or tomorrow morning.
You got it.
I cannot wait to see which receiver is there in the first round and everything else, honestly. I'll be just as interested to see how you see the draft playing out in terms of positional needs and all that stuff. Going up on ChiefsDigest.com very, very soon. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Josh. And I will be disappointed if you do not bash my mock draft and call me an idiot online.
I will do that for you. In fact,
I mean, I'll do it right now.
I think, you know what, we can make this agreement now in front of each other and the audience and God and everyone, but people on Twitter won't see it. If you want, whenever you tweet out your link, I will quote tweet it and say that I think that's the worst mock draft that I've seen all draft cycle or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then people will click it to see what you said. You'll get clicks. I'll get yelled at on the internet. It's the best of both worlds.
Win-win all the way.
All right, let's do that. Thank you, Matt.
Take care, guys.
Go read the story whenever it pops up on Chiefs Digest. I'll quote tweet it, call it terrible, and you can read it at ChiefsDigest.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Matt Derrick. Let's take a break. Whenever we come back, I want to talk about some of those things. I'll get distracted by something else. We've got a lot of little topics to get to. Also, more draft talk with another guest 20 minutes from now. This show's just going to run away from us tonight, and I think that's probably a good thing because, you know, I need someone else to talk about Tevin Jenkins for 20 minutes at a time.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Alex Smith isn't a top 20 Hanson quarterback? And Andy Dalton is?
With Joshua Briscoe.
How is Alex Smith not a top 20 quarterback in handsomeness?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
On that note, I would love, as Almost Entirely Sports, to wish a very happy retirement to a top 20 all-time most handsome quarterback, Alex Smith. You're not going to come up with 20 more than that, right? I was going to say 25, but that felt disrespectful.
That's too much.
It's disrespectful, yeah, right?
Yeah. It's disrespectful.
You know what also I'm going to say? While I got you here, Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
More handsome than Troy Aikman.
Oh, boy. I agree.
I'm going to say it. And listen, if First Take wants to pick this up again.
Oh, definitely.
Please credit Almost Entirely Sports. It was said by a man named Beards McFly.
With a knee?
Yes.
Yes, just the one in the middle, but yeah.
At the very beginning.
Chrome has crashed again. My computer's doing an odd...
Doing a thing?
Odd thing. We're going to restart this and hope this comes back.
That's not fun.
Much like Alex Smith's career, you know, this computer's been pretty good and then really was working for a while for me.
Yeah.
And then it's dealing with some sort of disastrous issues. Love for it to come back around. Give me one more good run.
Just one more.
One more good run.
Just come back to show that you can, right?
I didn't grab the audio of it, but I heard Andy Reid talk about Alex Smith a little bit today. He said that if he ever decides to go into coaching, which Andy Reid does not expect him to, and I think he's probably right, but he said he'd call dibs. He gets first dibs on adding Alex Smith to his staff, and that's just fun. Like, I just like that for both of them. It's just kind of a fun little snippet.
Future Chiefs head coach, Alex Smith.
I'll tell you what.
You heard it here first.
If he wanted, here's the thing. Like, he made way more money than Mike Kafka.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Alex Smith, I don't know Mike Kafka well enough to say this about him. But, like, Alex Smith doesn't seem to me like somebody who's going to, like, lose all direction without football, which I think is, again, certainly not always why people go into coaching. And once again, my apologies for insinuating that Mike Kafka doesn't have anything else going on.
He has nothing to live for besides coaching. But like
I do not know that about Mike Kafka. Please, nobody clip this and send it to Mike Kafka.
It is why, like, some people
weird for me to
get into coaching, right?
But, right.
Like,
my whole life has been around football, and now I can't
coaching,
play anymore.
But it's working in the sport when you're done, right? Maybe that's broadcasting, right? Like my guess is. And this is not a drag on Troy Aikman. My guess is Troy Aikman got into broadcasting. I mean, one.
Drag him.
You need, like, you're looking for employment.
Drag
but
him.
Also, like, he was probably like, man, I don't want to be away from football.
Drag
like,
that dude.
Yeah, there's plenty of reasons to drag Troy Aikman. I just think that's not the one of them.
That's fair. Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, I don't know that Alex Smith will go into coaching. I don't know if he'll go into the media. I don't know what he'll do.
Do
but,
you want to know
he,
how much
he announced his retirement
how
today?
How much money Alex Smith made in his
sure,
career?
Sure, just as soon as I finish my last sentence, I'd love to hear that.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Go ahead. Can I, you want to guess?
I thought, yes, I would like that. I thought the sentence had ended, and so I started to talk.
That's
thought it was
fine.
Like, I thought I timed it up well, and I did not.
I you know, I do think there's something to be said for us doing a decent job of like crossfading our sentences, mm-hmm. but sometimes we're not as good at it.
No, but it's fine.
Career salary guessing game, Alex Smith.
Career earnings. Total cash made.
Beards, do you want to go first? I'm afraid that I'm going to overshoot it.
I don't know, like $3 million?
Are we playing Price is Right rules or...
maybe four.
I'm gonna throttle mine back a little bit. Cause I really don't want to overshoot it. I'm gonna say $140 million.
$189 million.
I was gonna say 175, and it felt too high.
He fell 275 short of an even 190. The thing that
what
really,
was his rookie contract?
His rookie contract was pulling it.
Oh, then I also want to know what you know what. I'm kicking myself because yeah, I want to so know his, what he made from Washington. Also,
so the Washington. So his rookie Sorry, deal was 6 years, $53.5 million.
That's a good start.
Yeah, because he was
pre rookie wage scale.
Yes, pre rookie wage scale. The Redskins he signed 4 years at 94.
Sorry, what?
Oh, good catch. Well, at the time
their name was a racial slur.
Yes, sorry about that. The
Washington football team.
I apologize.
Shame on you.
I know. It's funny.
It's fine. I'm not that heated about it.
It's funny, though, that it took me that, like, it never happened. It took me, like, a year.
That's
like,
true.
A full year with
You're
the
probably
team.
Looking at the. Yeah, it's yeah. fine. Did he. Was that a $40 million
I think he
deal?
May have played in St. Louis for the Chargers as well. That's a joke.
It's a joke
yeah,
everybody.
4 years, $94 million. But his first.
94?
His first year there. You know how much he made in his first year?
Oh, I might have. I don't know. No.
$40 million.
Whew.
Dollars.
Whew.
That's a little disappointing.
That's okay. That's a nice little payday.
If he had made just $750K more with the Chiefs, that's like a workout bonus.
Mm-hmm.
He would have made an even $69 million. That'd been a real nice way.
Why
to,
is that? I don't understand.
Real nice
no,
way to end your.
I don't understand why that's no
end your time.
I mean, yeah, it would have been good, but I don't know if it's like noteworthy.
Right, 750 grand. I mean, he made 40 million the next year in Washington. I don't really see what the
I
issue
could use 750 grand.
Sure. Yeah, nice. I mean, it would be nice to have 750 grand. I don't get it.
Be very nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to end your tenure with the Chiefs. Chiefs should sign him to a one-day 750K retirement contract. Just let him get there, Chiefs.
They did all that salary cap moving around to give Alex Smith to get Alex Smith.
I mean, he had this extra money that apparently you're just not going to spend. Why not give it to Alex Smith? Happy early birthday, Alex Smith, too. It's coming up in just about a week. Turned 37.
We could have waxed eloquent about Alex Smith for a while, and we're probably not going to over the course of the show very much. But I will say this genuinely. Think about where the Chiefs were at pre-Alex Smith. In 2013, that draft class would have been. Instead of Eric Fisher, who we're now already ready for him to be back, by the way, would have been Geno Smith at number one, and everything is different. So yep. I think, I can't remember who it was, I think this may have been a particular dead to the show, friend of the show, who tweeted, the Chiefs did ultimately outgrow Alex Smith, but they would not have gotten to that point without him. And you could say, or his equivalent, but his equivalent wasn't super available at that time. And even with the first overall pick in that year's draft, the Chiefs got the best quarterback who was available by getting Alex Smith for 2 second-round picks. And again, I don't want to overstate or estimate how much of an impact he had on Patrick Mahomes, because I think that probably gets out ahead of our skis a little bit. What I will say is for the years that he was the starter, also breaking the playoff drought that the Chiefs had,
yep.
Alex Smith was absolutely instrumental into what the Chiefs were rebuilt into with Andy Reid, with John Dorsey at the time, to Brett Veach, with a sort of different version of Clark Hunt with Andy Reid at the helm. Truly instrumental to getting the Chiefs to where they are now. I believe that so much that we're going to go to break, and I'm not even going to make a joke about any of those things.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Although a 1-2 punch of Alex Smith and Sam Bradford, that seems like a handsome backfield.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Rogers, Brady.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not 1-2 necessarily, but that's a handsome
contenders.
Enough. That's a,
contenders.
Yeah, right, right. That's
who's
not
at the bottom of that list?
Ben Roethlisberger and Peyton Manning.
Is that forehead still expanding?
Yeah, it's like the universe. It just keeps expanding. I don't really know how it works.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It really caught me by surprise, even in the liner, that I was so ready with the answer to that question. Because I was hearing Beards ask it in liner form and thinking, all right, I'm probably not going to answer that question. I probably wouldn't answer that question now. Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, boom, boom. 1-2. Also, as we've previously established, Patrick Mahomes' handsomeness at the time of this conversation was simply too raw for the NFL. And, you know, needed to really come into his own. I'm trying to think about the sort of power ranking we could do in terms of, like, all-time handsomest quarterbacks. But specifically, Chiefs-era Alex Smith, I think, is, if not an absolute top 25 lock, would be a juggernaut underdog in a March Madness-style bracket. Guys, unrelated, I know what bracket we're going to do next March.
Oh, boy.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.